This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This hour's top stories: a top U.S. general says Iran possesses one of the most capable militaries in West Asia, and its missile force is the most formidable in the region. Israeli forces attack Palestinian protesters in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds, injuring over 100 and arresting over 50 people. Also in the headlines, the search and rescue operation intensifies for an Indonesian Navy submarine, which went missing Wednesday with 53 crew members. Welcome to the program. Head of U.S. Central Command Kenneth McKenzie says Iran possesses one of the most capable militaries in the Middle East. McKenzie was addressing the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee. He said Iran's offensive capabilities include nearly short- and long-range ballistic missiles, as well as an array of land-attack cruise missiles. The top general said Iran's ballistic missile force is the most formidable one in the region. On Tuesday, McKenzie testified before the U.S. House Armed Services Committee. He said Iran's widespread use of small and medium-sized drones means the U.S. is operating without complete air superiority for the first time since the Korean War. Iran has time and again stated that its military capabilities are merely defensive and are designed to deter foreign threats. Welcome to this hour's On the News Line. Israel keeps up its destabilizing actions throughout the region. The regime has once again escalated tensions with Iran. Israel's dangerous gambits against regional countries seem to be undermining its own security.
Israel is widely viewed as a destabilizing force in the West Asia region. It has started many wars over the past decades against regional nations. The occupying regime's hostile actions are unending. Right now, it routinely launches airstrikes against targets in Syria. It is also widely blamed for high-profile assassinations of top nuclear scientists in Iran. The regime is believed to have carried out the recent sabotage attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility, which operates under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iran was quick to pledge to retaliate for the attack on Natanz. Tel Aviv apparently knows no limit when it comes to clandestine operations against other countries. The regime always says it carries out such actions out of worries for its own security. Such dangerous policies could be starting to backfire. This week, a sensitive missile factory in central Israel was rocked by a powerful blast. The huge explosion, which created a mushroom cloud, hit the Tomer factory for advanced weapons. Israeli officials say the blast was a test. On Thursday, a missile fired from Syria landed near the secretive Dimona nuclear weapons facility, triggering warning sirens. The Israeli military said the projectile was a surface-to-air missile fired by Syrian forces against Israeli warplanes. It says the projectile overflew its target and landed near Dimona. But the heavily protected nuclear facility is some 300 kilometers south of Damascus. It is a very long distance for an errant missile.
Israel has escalated tensions with Iran and does not seem to be trying to make a secret of its operations against the regional power. Israeli sources keep leaking the covert operations, but will the regime always be able to hit and run? Tehran has said that it will respond in the right place and at the right time.
The missile fired from Syria on Thursday landed just some 30 kilometers away from the notorious Israeli nuclear facility. Military experts say this has once again revealed that much trumpeted Israeli air defenses are penetrable. The projectile made it through the air defense layers despite the fact that anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems around Dimona have been significantly boosted in anticipation of a possible retaliatory missile or drone attack by Iran or resistance groups close to Iran.
By looking at this particular site, Dimona, where this weapon nearly hit, it's saying, well, if you really want to have some sort of fight, you do realise that your nuclear facilities, we know exactly where they are, and they could be hit too. And I'm afraid just simply repeating the lies about the impenetrability of the Israeli air defences and missile defences is not going to save anybody in a conflict. It's really just hot air.
Israeli media, like the Times of Israel, have highlighted the fact that the missile landed deep inside Israel amid heightened tensions with Iran and after Tehran's pledge of retaliation. Some other media organizations, like the Middle East Monitor, said Netanyahu's comments after the attack on Natanz looked like a claim of responsibility, and this may have pushed Iran to retaliate. Israel seems increasingly worried about the possibility of the United States removing sanctions against Iran to re-enter the 2015 nuclear deal that America abandoned under former President Donald Trump. Israel has always been a vociferous critic of the deal, also known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The regime could carry out more covert operations against the Iranians, further raising regional tensions. But if that happens and things spiral out of control, the regime has to be held responsible for possible repercussions for the region and beyond.
The UN has called for all eligible Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem on votes to be able to vote in the upcoming Palestinian parliamentary elections. A UN spokesman said it is very important Palestinians in all parts of the occupied territories are able to participate in the democratic process. European members of the UN Security Council have made the same call. Meanwhile, Palestinian envoy to the UN, Riyad Mansour, has urged countries to press Israel not to block elections in East Jerusalem on votes. Palestinians will, in the month of May, hold their first legislative elections in 15 years. Officials fear that thousands of them in Jerusalem al-Quds may be unable to vote as the process there requires a green light from Israel. Well, Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters in occupied East Jerusalem al-Quds, injuring 105. That's according to the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. It says 20 have been hospitalized. Israeli forces arrested over 50 Palestinian demonstrators. They were protesting restrictions on their gatherings in Jerusalem al-Quds' old city during the fasting month of Ramadan. The Palestinian prime minister has condemned the violence as institutionalized terrorism of Israel against Palestinians and their sanctities. Mohammed Shataya said such acts of aggression are aimed at Judaizing Jerusalem al-Quds. He called for the international condemnation of the Israeli violence. The latest clashes came after videos posted online showed Palestinians being harassed Wednesday night by Israeli youths shouting, quote, death to Arabs. Elsewhere, the Yemeni army has conducted fresh airstrikes on Saudi Arabia in retaliation for the kingdom's ongoing war on its southern neighbor. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says the latest airstrikes hit King Khalid Air Base in the southwestern Saudi city of Khamis Mushayt. Sari says the attack was carried out using a Qasif K2 drone, the same type of drone was used for another attack on the airbase on Thursday. The same day, a Yemen airstrike hit a facility belonging to Saudi oil company Aramco in Jizan province. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched their war on Yemen 6 years ago. Yemen says its retaliatory attacks will continue until the aggression ends. India has set another global record for daily coronavirus cases for second day in a row. It has registered more than 332,000 new infections. India's total caseload has now passed 16 million. New daily deaths also jumped by a record of nearly 2,300, pushing the total to almost 187,000. The virus surge comes as India's healthcare system is in crisis, facing a shortage of oxygen and hospital beds. That has forced major hospitals to reject patients. They have deployed police to secure oxygen supplies. The ailing system has also witnessed several accidents in recent days. They include a fire in a Mumbai hospital that killed 30 patients. Well, the second wave of COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc in the Indian subcontinent. As Munawar Zaman reports from New Delhi, the country is reeling under acute shortage of healthcare facilities. The number of deaths is overwhelming as lack of space for cremation and burial grounds is also a problem. Here's more.
This is the funeral of a 59-year-old woman, and only her close relatives are performing the last rites. Her family says she didn't die of the coronavirus, but due to lack of space in the hospital. The second wave of COVID-19 pandemic has brought the country's healthcare on the brink of collapse as hospitals struggle with lack of resources and space. The country is battling with lack of oxygen supplies and spaces to cremate the dead ones.
We are running out of space here. We have cremated around 40 bodies since morning. This is crisis. We are tired and overwhelmed.
Just a mile away from the crematorium, a truck loaded with oxygen cylinders is preparing a delivery to some nearby hospitals with police protection as oxygen tankers and cylinders are being looted in some parts of the country. This truck loader says we are working 24/7 to deliver as much as we can. So are the ambulance drivers.
This is war, not a pandemic. We are restless. We are running out of ambulances and oxygen supplies. But we are trying our best to save lives.
On Friday, India reported over 330,000 fresh cases of coronavirus, which is the highest daily increase the country has recorded so far. Over 2,200 deaths were also reported across the country, with the state of Maharashtra, Uttar Pradesh, New Delhi, and Madhya Pradesh being the worst affected. The country has recorded 15 million cases so far and more than 184,000 deaths. Health experts say the unprecedented second wave could be blamed on a double mutant variant strains and recent religious gatherings and election campaigns, which has brought the healthcare to a breaking point.
India's coronavirus crisis is deepening further with each passing day, and the country is in a grip of a devastating second wave of the virus. Many unforeseen issues are cropping up and severely hampering the country's fight against the virus. Health experts believe the country's health system is on the verge of collapse, blaming the government's unpreparedness and failed policies for the country's failure to tackle the second wave. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Now, the hunt for a missing Indonesian submarine reaches a critical phase due to limited oxygen supplies on board the vessel. Rescue aircraft and ships continue to search north of Bali 2 days after the submarine went missing. Indonesian officials say the air supply of the vessel would last only until Saturday. They say so far in the search, only an item with high magnetic force has been found. Earlier, an oil spill was also spotted near the vessel's last location. 53 people were on board the submarine when it lost contact during a torpedo drill in the Bali Sea. Pakistan's parliament will resume a debate on whether to expel the French ambassador over the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Lawmakers will hold the debate following a resolution that called off recent anti-France protests in Pakistan. The protests last week turned violent, leading to at least a dozen deaths. Earlier this week, the government reached a resolution with the Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, the TLP. That's the party that organized the rallies and called for the expulsion of the French envoy. The TLP waged its anti-France campaign months ago. It did so after the French parliament, or I should say government, defended a satirical magazine to republish the Prophet Muhammad's cartoons. France's move drew strong criticism from across the Muslim world. China has strongly condemned a British parliament's motion that called for an end to, quote, genocide in China's Xinjiang region.
The unwarranted accusation by a handful of British MPs that there is genocide in Xinjiang is the most preposterous lie of the century. An outrageous insult and affront to the Chinese people, and a gross breach of international law and the basic norms governing international relations.
The Chinese embassy in London called the British motion a blatant interference in China's internal affairs. The embassy urged Britain to immediately right its wrong moves. UK lawmakers introduced the motion on Wednesday. The British government has already imposed sanctions on some Chinese officials for the situation of Muslim Uyghur community in Xinjiang. Lawmakers want ministers to go further. Britain, along with the US and EU, accuse China of human rights violations against Uyghurs. Beijing strongly denies that. And now Russia says the West has turned the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons into a tool for placing political pressure on unwanted countries. Russia's envoy to the organization said the West is doing so to achieve its geopolitical interests. Alexander Shulgin said the organization, that is technical in nature, has now become politicized. He said this is a very dangerous trend that has unpredictable consequences. Russian envoy was speaking after the global chemical weapons watchdog stripped Syria of voting rights. The OPCW blamed Syria for gas attacks on civilians in 2017. That is while the country had surrendered its entire chemical stockpile 4 years earlier. Damascus has denied using chemical weapons.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
2015 may have produced the landmark nuclear deal, but 2021 may be the year that sees it resurrected. April in Vienna has been the scene of talks between current parties to the deal and America. That's to say, the P4 plus one parties are trying to help the US back into the nuclear deal or JCPOA, so that Iran will fully recommit and the deal is reset to how it started out 6 years ago. Oh, but in the midst of talks, Iran's main nuclear power plant came under a terror attack, presumably to weaken Iran's hands at the negotiating table by taking away its leverage. Will the saboteurs be given the satisfaction, or will the world's most prominent nations keep sharp and conclude the Vienna talks with results before any more spanners can be put into the works? And while Iran's present government is still presiding nuclear deal talks. I'm Leila Faramayz. Nobody has directly taken responsibility for the attack on Natanz's nuclear enrichment site, but Israeli media has been filled with claims from unnamed officials claiming responsibility. And Israel, under Benjamin Netanyahu, has vowed not to see the deal revived. There is no room for doubt the saboteur was Israel. Wouldn't be the first time. How did it bust Iran's IR-1 centrifuges at the underground Natanz site? And would it dare go ahead without U.S. backing? Mr. Marandi is professor of international studies, frequenting major international news channels. He says,
without a doubt, the attack was carried out with American knowledge and American support. It's impossible that the Israeli regime would carry out such an attack at such a sensitive time without prior American knowledge. And the American Secretary of Defense was on his way to Tel Aviv when it was carried out. So no serious person would accept that the Israeli regime just carried out this attack on its own.
That is correct in all its madness and contradiction. American aid to the Israeli sabotage is in direct conflict with the nature of the talks. The nuclear deal or JCPOA talks are to convince Iran of American goodwill, of America's intention to lift sanctions off this country so that Iran can recomply and willingly slow down its civilian nuclear program. Instead, Natanz came under what Iran's nuclear agency branded nuclear terrorism. Mr. Rezvanpour is a political analyst who's been keeping close watch of JCPOA developments. He welcomed us at his home. Iran appears okay with not achieving what's intended from the Vienna talks. But would you say it's possible that all parties equally enter the JCPOA, re-enter?
The ongoing talks, which is being held at Vienna with the representatives of Iran and 4+1 groups, they have just held different kinds of meetings during the past couple of weeks. But the results of the meeting has not been shown to the public up to now. The reason why it has not been concluded is that the West is persisting on its own demand. In international relationships, we have a principle. They say, what is mine, and what is yours is negotiable.
Mr. Mackey is a political analyst with all the details. He visited Press TV studios to share his views. Thing is, parties to the JCPOA don't have any more time to drag their feet along. So, are we going to get results? Are the US and Iran going to resurrect the JCPOA?
The behavior and reaction of the European and American governments show that they have the political will to lift the sanctions and return to their obligations under the JCPOA. But reviving the deal isn't limited to Iran and the United States. There are actors inside Washington, Tehran, and also the region and the whole world that can play negative or positive roles in the process of talks. This has made the talks quite complicated. We can't expect anything extraordinary to happen in the short term.
The contradiction comes in brighter light as we look at Iran's reaction. Rather than getting blackmailed into even indirect talks with the U.S., it just immediately took to further and faster uranium enrichment. It is no longer settling for 20% enrichment, but is set to enrich uranium up to 60% purity, and it will be replacing the old damaged centrifuges with more advanced IR-6 models. That will significantly increase its enrichment capacity. Well, the U.S. just hasn't come to know Iran in 40 years and more. What's troubling is that the Europeans haven't condemned Israel's actions.
Why would you say Iran's European partners in the JCPOA didn't condemn Israel's act of sabotage?
Anywhere in the world, they are controlling different kinds of politicians in the U.S., in Europe. So they didn't condemn Israeli act. And this action overshadowed, I mean, the process of negotiations between Iranian representative and 4+1 group. In my opinion, the Western governments must condemn Israel because they committed, as I stated before, they committed a nuclear terrorism in our nuclear facilities.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas expressed concern that the attack could affect the talks by saying, "All of what we're hearing from Tehran is not a positive contribution to this. All of what we're hearing from Tehran. Thing is, they might hear something more positive if they heed Iran's natural expectation to have the act of terror on Natanz condemned." The German minister's comments came as U.S. Defense Secretary Austin and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken prepared to meet their counterparts in Brussels for talks with European and NATO allies, likely to touch on Iran.
Well, we have to keep in mind that Western intelligence agencies, NATO intelligence agencies, and the Israelis, they're all working together. It's not as if it's one against one or two against one. Western embassies are sometimes involved. Even people working in the media are sometimes involved. People working in the International Atomic Energy Agency have been involved.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif sent a letter to the UN Security Council asking it to hold Israel accountable. He tweeted, "Deliberate targeting of a safeguarded nuclear facility with high risk of indiscriminate release of radioactive material is nuclear terrorism and a war crime." Iran also delivered a letter to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, urging it to condemn the attack. The IAEA is the United Nations nuclear watchdog that monitors Iran's nuclear program more than any other.
Iran just asked the Western sides to condemn this kind of Israeli action in its own nuclear facilities, but never Western authorities didn't answer and didn't just stated any response. So it was their fault, in my opinion. Even at the negotiating table, they didn't issue a statement condemning Israeli action regarding this sabotage act in Natanz nuclear facilities. And the Western countries, 4+1 group, should issue a statement condemn Israeli actions because it is our own right under nuclear non-proliferation treaty.
The purpose of the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or Iran nuclear deal, was to limit Iran's civilian nuclear program by lifting nuclear-related economic UN sanctions off this country. But the U.S. under Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the deal in 2018 and reimposed and reinforced UN sanctions as U.S. sanctions. Europeans failed to help Iran in spite of this country's compliance with the deal. So, Iran started reversibly stepping out of its commitments and awaiting respite. Even this, it did in line with the UN Security Council Resolution 2231 and the JCPOA, Articles 26 and 36.
Time to give other outlets a chance to get a word in. So let's take leave of our narrative for a bit for a quick media review. And here's the words they put it in. Looking at TRT World, the intentions behind the Natanz terror attack could have backfired to benefit Iran's diplomatic efforts at Vienna. Nuclear terrorism in Natanz threatens diplomacy in Vienna. Given Tel Aviv's record of lobbying the U.S. to take military action against Iran, it is hardly surprising that the Israelis would be keen to remind all in the region and beyond that there are options outside of diplomacy for addressing Iran's nuclear activity. The Israeli Prime Minister wants the world to know that his country will not sit by idly as talks in Vienna progress, with almost all actors in the international community hoping for a successful revival of the JCPOA. In attacking the nuclear facility in Natanz, however, Israel might be undermining its anti-diplomacy agenda. This attack could increase the resolve of diplomats in Europe who are attempting to save the nuclear accord before Iran's upcoming presidential election. The attack will undoubtedly push all parties involved to redouble their efforts in finding a resolution during the ongoing negotiations in Vienna, according to foreign policy analyst Mehran Haghirian. Iran will use this issue as leverage in the negotiations and at the same time further advance its nuclear program in contradiction to the JCPOA until an agreement is reached in Vienna. Tehran Times tells of how Iran will be responding to the Natanz sabotage. "We will avenge sabotage in Natanz in the aggressor's land," says government. Speaking at his weekly press briefing, Ali Rabi condemned the terrorist attack at the Natanz nuclear site and stressed that action against the Natanz nuclear site shows the defeat of the enemies of Iran's industrial and political progresses. Noting that Iran reserves the right to take action against the perpetrators of the attack, he said, Iran, while condemning this move, urges the international community to respond to this nuclear terrorism. To thwart this goal, the Iranian government will continue to seriously pursue the development of nuclear technology and work to lift sanctions. Rabi, the government spokesman, said, "This sabotage action is intended to prevent the country's development on the one hand and successful negotiations to lift the cruel sanctions on the other." The government spokesman stressed that Iran will retaliate at the appropriate time and with proportionate intensity, but we will not allow the enemies to achieve their political goals. One question remained unanswered. How was the terror attack conducted? Israel would have us believe it was a cyber attack. Here's what Reuters says. Iran identifies suspects behind blast at Natanz nuclear site. Iran on Saturday, April the 17th, named a man it wants arrested in connection with a recent explosion and power outage at its main Natanz nuclear plant, as talks got underway in Vienna to try to save Tehran's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. Reza Karimi, the perpetrator of this sabotage, has been identified by Iran's intelligence ministry, State TV said. It said the suspect had fled Iran before April the 11th blast that the Islamic Republic has blamed on arch foe Israel. The television showed what it said was a photograph of the suspected perpetrator on a red card that had Interpol Wanted written on it. The card listed his age as 43. Necessary steps are underway for his arrest and return to the country through legal channels, the report added. And that would be it for the news segment. Back to our narration. Cyber attack or infiltration and physical harm. Perhaps cyber attack by infiltration. Natanz was targeted also in July. An explosion ripped apart an advanced centrifuge assembly plant at the site. Hence, Iran said it would rebuild the site deep inside a nearby mountain. That's yet another instance to suspect Israel for, in addition to a string of incidents including assassinations stretched over the past decade. Looking at Israel's terror attack on Natanz, how do you see the Vienna talks ending?
The Vienna talks over the past week following the Natanz incident have seen many ups and downs. The United States and Europe's positions toward the developments have been something of a double standard. Attacking a country's nuclear facilities is unacceptable anywhere in the world. If this trend continues, it could pose a threat to regional and global security. The world's nuclear nations have signed agreements and memoranda in this regard and have established a red line for the security of nuclear facilities around the world, because they are well aware that if the nuclear security of the facilities is threatened, it will not be limited to that country or region.
Not only was the act not condemned by European parties to the deal, they further boycotted Iran at the same time. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi quoted himself in telling the European Union, "We told them that even your human rights sanctions that you imposed 2 days ago we consider as JCPOA-related sanctions, because right in the middle of negotiations you decided to impose sanctions, and that is certainly meant to undermine the current negotiations and to undermine the JCPOA altogether." Natanz found itself first targeted by a major cyber attack in the late 2000s, which is why the recent incident was readily suspected also to be a cyber attack. The first incident was by a virus. The virus, called Stuxnet, attacked control units for centrifuges at Natanz, causing the sensitive devices to spin out of control and destroy themselves. Experts widely believe the attack was carried out by America and Israel, as does Iran. Natanz is ground zero for cyber war. It's the place where the world's first real cyber attack took place a decade ago, the joint US-Israel operation.
Israeli authorities are afraid of Iran becoming a nuclear power in peaceful manner. That's why they are committing different kinds of sabotage acts. Again, I'm repeating, during these times of negotiations, they are not willing Iran to become a party of 4+1 group. That's why they are trying to prevent Iran from getting the compromise, from reaching the compromise with its own parties.
The thing with the recent, that Sunday the 11th April attack on Natanz, is that it's not just Reuters anymore, but more and more reports pointing towards an explosion at the power supply rather than simply a cyber attack. Going by precedence, however, whatever the reason, it should only be a temporary setback for Iran's nuclear program. Still, even a simple blackout is not harmless at a nuclear site. Centrifuges are slender machines linked up in cascades which enrich uranium gas by spinning it at incredibly high speeds using rotors. The stress on the advanced materials involved is intense, and the process is technically immensely challenging. A small problem can send a centrifuge spinning out of control, with parts smashing into each other and damaging the whole cascade. I asked our experts how they predicted the outcome of the Vienna talks.
It's not unlikely that the U.S. would take a serious stance about lifting sanctions, considering the rise of tensions in the U.S.-Russia relations on the one hand, and the tensions between Washington and Beijing on the other, and the U.S. effort to counter China and Russia. So it has become more likely for them to seek an agreement with Iran. That being said, the parties who are opposed to JCPOA have adopted destructive policies that could affect the process of the agreement's revival. Israel's terrorist activities are part of that.
P4 JCPOA member state China is aware of the situation. Wang Kun, its head of delegation to Vienna, called for a faster pace and fewer distractions. Western parties can't not have been secretly pleased to see Iran's hand weakened, to see this country stripped of its leverage, its nuclear advancement, that is. Thing is, Iran never was stripped of anything. It's just picking up its nuclear program where it left off. And even without that, in attending the Vienna talks, it never meant to resurrect the deal at any cost. The idea was, the U.S. will lift all sanctions in a single stroke. Only then will Iran scale back its nuclear enrichment levels and re-compliance with the nuclear deal. And only after verifying that sanctions have really been lifted. That can take 6 months.
The reason why the U.S. didn't represent at the negotiating table was that it was Iran's demand that the U.S. Rob Mali should not be a representative of 4+1 at the negotiating table. It was Iranian request, and it was a great achievement for Iranian negotiators at the negotiating table. So, in my opinion, we must persist on our own demands. We should not get back. We should just move forward insists on our request, insists on our demands to remove all sanctions at the same time, completely, without any precondition. And after that, there should be a safeguarding, I mean, agreements between Iran and 4+1 or 5+1. Because in future, if Israel commit this kind of acts, we have to have a mechanism in order to respond to this Israeli act of sabotage.
You see, the attack on the Natanz nuclear facility a few months back and the recent attempt show there is a security gap in Iran that the Israelis can exploit and infiltrate to assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists and damage nuclear facilities. Well, this is a negative point. But the other point that should be noted about Iran's nuclear program is that it has become indigenous. Israel cannot be more wrong to think that an attack on a nuclear facility could hinder Iran's efforts and prolong the Vienna talks or even result in the JCPOA's demise. But that didn't happen.
Sabotage and crime stretched over a decade, all leaving behind a trail of Israeli footprints. Here's the sum of lives lost. 5 scientists in 10 years, plus in some cases their companions. By end November 2020, at least 4 nuclear scientists had been killed in vehicle bombings and shootouts, and several others had been targeted but survived. Those killed with martyr status are Masoud Ali Mohammadi, Majid Shahriari, Dariush Rezai Nejad, Mustafa Ahmadi Roshan, and most recently on the 27th of November 2020, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Both the US and Israel denied involvement. Fereydoun Abbasi was wounded end 2010, but he survived after being rushed to hospital. The most recent sabotage of the nuclear program followed Iran's unveiling of its nuclear achievements, which are of great use for medical purposes, say making medicine. The unveiling happened on National Nuclear Technology Day, April the 10th, 2021. Saturday, April the 10th, saw an exhibition of 133 technological innovations with civilian and medical uses. In Isfahan's Natanz alone, the order was given to feed gas to 164 all-Iranian IR-6 centrifuges, slated to be mass-produced on an industrial level. Also, mechanical tests began on the top-of-the-line IR-9 centrifuge that has a separative capacity of 50 SWU. And a unit to assemble and evaluate advanced centrifuges was launched. There, the presenting engineer said, more than half of all operations are currently industrialized. Natanz, where the country's largest nuclear facilities are located, is in central Iran. 3 major nuclear sites apart from Natanz are the Arak Heavy Water Reactor Facility, Bushehr Nuclear Power Plant, and Fordo Enrichment Site. Ill will surrounds JCPOA talks, even by some Arab neighbors. Although, according to insiders, technical talks would continue at the expert level in the areas of sanctions and nuclear enrichment. Also, bilateral meetings would continue on the sidelines.
Iran's antagonists, regimes like Saudi Arabia and Israel, they're facing major problems. We see in Yemen that the Saudis are being badly defeated alongside the Emirates. And when their overlords, the Americans and the Europeans, are having their own problems, that basically means that Iran's influence rises. The influence of Iran's allies rise. So if the Americans want to continue hostility with Iran and to continue with heightened tensions, then they're going to have to spend more trillions of dollars in this region at a time when they cannot compete with the Chinese.
Apparently, parties have come to a considerable understanding, finally. As of Monday, April the 19th, here's what was tweeted by Mikhail Ulyanov. That's Russia's permanent representative to organizations in Vienna. Summing up the results of 2 weeks of deliberations on JCPOA restoration, we can note with satisfaction that the negotiations entered the drafting stage. Practical solutions are still far away. But we have moved from general words to agreeing on specific steps towards the goal. That's it for today, but there's plenty more to follow, so do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after. From me and the whole team, bye for now.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, summoned the Muslims to cling to silence. He ordered them to refrain from saying useless words. He, peace be upon him, said, "Indeed, this tongue is the key of all good and evil." So the believer must seal his tongue as he seals his gold and silver. For Allah's apostle, may Allah bless him and his family, said, "May Allah have mercy on the believer who restrains his tongue from all evil, for that is alms for him for himself. No one is safe from sins unless he restrains his tongue."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam on many occasions has urged his companions towards the Islamic rules of Islamic social conduct. It is interesting, but Imam al-Baqir talks about four qualities which are very important for all Muslims to have. And I would say these are four qualities which every human being should have. And so two of these qualities had been mentioned in the previous program, which was to shelter the orphan and to have mercy on the weak. Now, in this dialogue between his companions and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and the Muslims, Imam al-Baqir says, whoever has four qualities, Allah will build a house for them in the Garden of Paradise. We talked about how the one who shelters the orphan and has mercy on the weak is a sign of societal progress and societal refinement. Here we talk about the other two things which Imam al-Baqir said will have Allah build a house for us in paradise, which is to feel compassion for your parents and treat your slaves or your servants gently. Now, these two, I believe, are more individual signals and signs of progress and refinement, whereas the first two, helping the orphan and having mercy on the weak, are societal signs of progress. Now, in this individual signs of progress, we find that Imam al-Baqir has said to his companions that one must feel compassion for your parents, love your parents, treat your parents kindly, something which is so very much needed in today's world, where culture, unfortunately, has become to disrespect one's parents or to not respect one's parents to the extent which they should be respected. And of course, treating your slave gently. If this commandment of Imam al-Baqir, which was given over 1,000 years ago, had been implemented in history, we would have never seen the amount of oppression and harm and violence and aggression and hatred towards slaves and servants which was witnessed by history. If only we had turned towards the door of the Ahl al-Bayt, the family of the Holy Prophet, and learned from them what we should have learned. Beautiful messages in this dialogue by Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I want you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam.
Prophet says, give my salams to Baqir ul-Ulum, the fifth Imam. And his name, the title been given, Prophet continues in the hadith, is because he will cut open the knowledge. He will bring the knowledge out. And like we said earlier today, the Islamic civilization is indebted to Imam Baqir alayhi salam, because he has brought that, he has challenged, he has propagated ilm and the importance of knowledge, where the Arabs of that time were immensely involved in fitnas, because it is a time period where the Umayyads transferring to the Abbasites. It is that time period right now. Five Khalifas came to power during the life of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Five Khalifas came to power and they were brought down from power. So this is a time where the Islamic nation is going through a turmoil. One king after the other king is coming. There's a chaos, there's a fitna. But Imam laid the foundation of ilm and knowledge.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
About you. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.